Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest joining me now is Robert Sullivan. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hello, Vinnie. Great to be with you here on your show, Guerrilla Media. Great to be here. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's just the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm sort of like in that Guerrilla Media thing on a back burner because some sociopath stole it. And the problem is you can't steal back from sociopaths. You just kind of have to let him have it. Sort of like an angry dog that's diseased with rabies takes a bone off you. You're like, I don't want that back. Otherwise, that would you be able to tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do, Robert? Because I've had a look at your profile, and it looks like you're Freemasonry up to the gills.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a Freemason here in Baltimore, Maryland, and I wrote a book that came out 2 years ago, almost to the month, called The Royal Arch of Enoch, The Impact of Masonic Ritual, Philosophy, and Symbolism. The book's out now. It's on Kindle. It's on Nook. You can go get the paperback copies if you want. And what the thrust of the book is, in a nutshell, to condense this really, is that this one particular high-degree ritual known as the Royal Arch of Enoch is incorporating elements of one Enoch, or the Book of Enoch, which was lost to Western civilization from around 2-3 Common Era until 1773. And even then, when it was brought back to Europe, it remained untranslated in the basement of the Bodleian Library at Oxford University. Yet my book documents that when this higher-degree ritual was being developed in Paris, France, in the 1740s, 1750s, it was incorporating elements of the Book of Enoch. So it was a historical anomaly going on. And I just published, in fact, it is out right now, it actually just came out today, is the second book I just got out called Cinema Symbolism, A Guide to Esoteric Imagery in Popular Movies. And this was kind of an extension of the last chapter of the Royal Arch of Enoch, where in that I talked about some of the concealed, you know, solar, Masonic, Enochian themes in movies such as Da Vinci Code, National Treasure, Being There, things like that. And in this, I went more into, again, some of the numerological occult symbols in movies like The Matrix and Back to the Future and Star Wars and all that good stuff. And that book's out right now. It just came out on Kindle, Nook, paperback. If you want it, you just go to my website, robertwsullivaniv.com, and you click the link there, and you can go get it.
And how long's it exactly been out, and what kind of have you had any backlash from it?
For the Royal Arch of Enoch? No, the Royal Arch of Enoch, that came out in August of 2012. I didn't really get any backlash. There has been some criticism of it. You know, you can't do anything in life without there being a naysayer.
Well, of course.
Yeah, but that's okay. I kind of knew that was coming. No, it's a historical book. It delves into Masonic philosophy, symbolism. I get into some of the more controversial aspects of it, you know, some of the, you know, the occult template of Washington, D.C., things like that. But by and large, no, I haven't caught any backlash from it. But if you're a Freemason, what they really don't want, you know, if you talk about the history and the philosophy and the symbols and stuff like that, that's fair game. What they don't want you talking about is revealing like the handshakes, the tokens, the passwords, the passcripts, signs of recognition. That's the sort of stuff they really frown upon. And I didn't do that in the book. The only time that if I had to mention a password, or not even a password, like a secret name or something like that, I just wrote the initials down. The truth be told, a simple Google search will reveal all this stuff anyway. But they just really don't want you writing it down. But no, I haven't had any men in black show up on my doorstep yet.
No men in Masonic rings either. Yeah. Well, it's the question, though, exactly what are the implications of this book? What are the deeper discoveries, things that people can actually learn and take away from it?
Yeah, I think the deeper implications are, number one, is that it presents this historical anomaly for the first time that that in a nutshell, this higher degree ritual is incorporating the Book of elements and philosophies and things like that from the Book of Enoch, when it shouldn't have. Like I said, mainstream history will tell you the Book of Enoch was lost to Western civilization from 2-3 Common Era up to basically 1821. But clearly someone had a copy of this, or at least a detailed outline of it of some effect. I've been asked before where a possible source of this book may have been. The Vatican archives scream off the page to me, as does Dr. John Dee, who was Queen Elizabeth's court astrologer. And there's reasons why I point to Dee. But the deeper implications of is the ritual. It's in the Scottish Rite. It's the 13th of the Scottish Rite. It's the 7th in the York Rite. It's really one of the more important rituals within Freemasonry, because it documents the recovery of what's called the Tetragrammaton, which is just a real fancy way of me saying the name of God, which is the lost word of a master Mason. This is the word that is lost in the Blue Lodge, but is recovered in this higher degree ceremonial. And what the book presents on a deeper level is it's a lot of the philosophies and symbols and lessons and emblems coming out of this particular degree that are really being incorporated into a lot of the symbolic architecture going on in Washington, D.C. You'll see it in Baltimore, Maryland, which is where I am. The Erie Canal in New York State was dedicated in a Royal Arch ceremonial. It was really one of the, at the time, prior to the formulation of the York and Scottish Rites, it was really the premier highest degree in the United States. I mean, this breaks off a little bit from England. Their tradition's a little bit different. But the book really presents this anomaly and then presents the historical importance of this degree in things such as the formulation of the United States.
So it's actually kind of like a, I don't know, in terms of Freemasonry, in a lot of ways, a founding document sort of thing, like in that kind of realm of importance?
Well, it's like I said, the book talks about, you know, the development of the ritual and some of the symbols and why it's important both on the Blue Lodge and the high degree level. And then I get into, you know, some of the, you know, the architecture that you'll find in D.C., which, you know, has incorporates a lot of solar imagery. This comes both out of the higher degrees, the Royal Arch Ceremonial, and the Blue Lodge as well. But the book is 700 pages long, and it really, you know, what I like to think of with the book is it really gives you a history lesson of Freemasonry. Also, it just doesn't start off talking about this anomaly. I get into the development of Freemasonry, how the high degrees are different from the Blue Lodge system on a philosophical level. Why this degree is so important. I talk about the elements from the Book of Enoch that are being incorporated into the degree, which shouldn't actually be happening. And I get into a lot of the occult themes, you know, the symbolism going on in both Blue Lodge and the higher degrees, and, you know, how this is being carried on and carried forward in some of the, you know, Masonic architecture and templates of things like Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Maryland, which is where I am, the Erie Canal. You'll find it in colleges and universities as well. And the book documents all this. What I was really excited about was that a lot of the material in the book is brand new. It's fresh material. It's not rehash. You're going to find a lot of new information in this book. And I like to think that I took on a lot of subject matters that a lot of Freemasons kind of, you know, dance around a little bit. Subjects like the Illuminati. I talk about the Illuminati influence in the development of the United States. I talk about the Jesuit influence, things like that. I get into some anti-Masonic, you know, aspects to be fair and balanced about this. So, you know, the book's been out. It's 700 pages. And like I said, it's in Kindle Nook. You can get the ebooks for $10.
Do you have a central website of your own where people can go purchase it or click on a banner or something, or is it just you have to search the book?
No. The answer is yes, Vinny. If you go to my website, which is www, and it's just my name, which is Robert W. Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N, and then I'm the fourth, so it's I-V. It's the letter I, the letter V.com, Robert W. Sullivan, I-V.com. If you go to the page, you'll see a banner right away where you can click to purchase the Royal Arch of Enoch book and the Cinema Symbolism book, which has just been released.
Now, in terms of Freemasonry, you said there was a bit of anti-Freemasonry stuff in there in terms of balance. And I've been speaking to a number of guys who are friends of mine who are also Masons, and some of them believe that there's a infiltration, sort of like a, mostly just done by the Scottish Rite, really, that's just sort of taking over Freemasonry in general. So every single time that the History Channel goes and mentions anything about Freemasonry, they've always got somebody from the Scottish Rite of the 33rd degree, given all the things, like we're the only branch of Freemasonry around. You ever hear about that kind of stuff?
No. The Scottish Rite... I am a member of the Scottish Rite. I'm a 32nd. When you join the Blue Lodge, you can join both degrees. You can join the York Rite or the Scottish Rite. You can join neither of them. You can join both of them. I guess for the History Channel, I don't know why they go to the Scottish Rite guys. I could tell you a lot of the Scottish Rite guys are also York Rite guys. You in the York Rite as well. A lot of those guys you see on the History Channel. I don't know if there's any sort of infiltration going on. But the York Rite and the Scottish Rite, are in a nutshell basically both born out of the same things. They're different, of course, but they do parallel each other. The original high degree system was called the Rites of Perfection. This is what incorporated this original Royal Arch of Enoch degree. This was, being developed, and I take this one full-fledged. This was being developed in Paris, France in the 1740s, 1750s by the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits, as part of the Counter-Reformation. And these 25 degrees are midwifed into the United States, and it becomes a man named Henry Franken sets up what's called the Lodge of Perfection in Albany, New York in 1767. And it's these 25 degrees that become what is ultimately the Scottish Rite. And in 1783, he publishes a manuscript detailing these rituals. And this is what Thomas Smith Webb, who is the godfather of the York Rite, he sort of picks apart to create the York Rite. Some of the degrees have the same, you know, there's a royal arch ceremony on the York Rite. I don't know of any, you know, Scottish Rite takeover or anything like that. Like I said, you can certainly.
Because I always thought that a lot of the Scottish Rite rituals came from, what was his name, Albert Pike or something.
No, this is totally 100% false. Albert, the Scottish Rite is set up in Charleston. The Mother Supreme Council of the World of the Scottish Rite is set up in Charleston, South Carolina in 1801. Albert Pike is born in 1807. So I'm still waiting for someone to explain 6 years before he's born how Albert Pike is setting up the Scottish Rite. He becomes Grand Sovereign Commander in 1859, and he remains that position to his death. He is definitely a bit of a controversial figure.
Like before he was born, like you say that Scottish Rite was happened 7 years before he was born. Was
right.
It established as having 33 degrees that 7 years before he was born, or did that happen and develop later on?
No, it is established with the degrees 4 through 32 and the honorary being the 33rd. This is established well before Pike comes along.
Where did they get the rituals for each degree to come up with that? Because Freemasonry had been around for a long time before the Scottish Rite popped up in that time frame, didn't it?
Well, Freemasonry, the you have two competing things going on. You have the Blue Lodge. This is degrees 1, 2, and 3. Of Entered Apprentice, Fellow Craft, and Master Mason. That's born as a modern institution in England in 1717 on June 24th. That's degrees 1, 2, and 3. The higher degree system, what ultimately becomes the Scottish Rite, is born in Paris, France in the 1740s, what's called the Rite of Perfection. These are 25 degrees that are being developed by the Jesuits to destroy the Church of England, for lack of a better word, because Freemasonic is born in England. The Jesuits have always wanted to destroy England ever since the founding of, you know, the Protestant Reformation and the foundation of the Church of England by Henry VIII. The Jesuits are also using these degrees as part of the Counter-Reformation. This is the destruction of the Western Church, of the Protestant Church. This is what they were charged with. The Jesuits were master mystics, Athanatus Kircher. These guys were the magicians of Europe. And they're developing these degrees to basically as subterfuge to undermine England and its monarchy. In a nutshell, they're using it to try to restore the Catholic side of the Stuarts back to the throne of England. The degrees, these 25 degrees, are midwifed into the United States slowly. The man mainly responsible for this is a guy named Etienne or Stephen Morin. And this gets set up in they're called the Rites of Perfection. And this gets set up in Albany, New York, by Henry Franken in the 1760s. And it is from this Rite of Perfection that becomes the meat and bones of the Scottish Rite. This is degrees 4 through 32. This is set up in Charleston, South Carolina, on May 31st of 1801, with the 33rd degree being honorary. Pike is born 6-7 years later. He is responsible for rewriting and reorganizing some of the degrees, But Albert Pike is not in any way, shape, or form the creator of the Scottish Rite.
I wasn't 100% sure on that. Thank you for clearing it up. The other element is I wanted to talk to you about is there's two types of Freemasonry as far as I've seen is those who use the teachings and the wisdom and the environment to advance themselves as people and walk right with the higher power, whatever that might be, according to your belief structure, and the other one is basically infiltration by psychopaths who actually use the fact that it's got secrecy and has people within it that are influential in order to merely enrich and empower themselves, not walking right with the higher power that they believe in.
Well, I think you can find that, I suppose. A lot of times,
in your personal experience, you ever known anybody in a lodge who's like just a bit of a scumbag, not naming any names?
No, I have never met any scumbags, but I can tell you right now that, even in my time, people have been suspended or thrown out of a lodge. It's bound to happen. I mean, when you have a fraternity as large as Freemasonry is, when people are brought into it, by and large, there's no criminal background check given. It's a lot of, we'll just take your word for it, although I have been told now that some Grand Lodges are actually screening criminal background checks for incoming members. This wasn't the case when I joined it. But, I mean, I know for a fact people have been thrown out of it, people who lie to get into it, and then it's subsequently discovered have a rap sheet a mile long or something. That would be no good, of course. And then someone gets arrested for a criminal offense. Yeah, I mean, your history, you're gone. You have infiltration of Freemasonry in the, I've been asked this before by this group called the Illuminati. This definitely happened. You will see elements of Illuminism in the early stages of the country. However, I would not call these people. The guy in the United States who is really behind this is a man named DeWitt Clinton. I wouldn't call him a psychopath or anything like that. He was basically, and I'm just condensing the answer here, he was using Freemasonry to influence political and socio-economic change over state lines. And you're right, there was some secrecy done with this, but Clinton would have, to Clinton, this would have been for positive change, not for some sort of secret, clandestine, government takeover or anything like that. However, and I've talked about this, in the book, when the William Morgan affair came along, which was this real big anti-Masonic movement, this kind of got exposed and Masonry was definitely viewed, in a negative light. And I think this is where a lot of this stuff comes from, where the Masons are, working behind the scenes in government to take over. It's really remnants of the William Morgan affair. And you did have Masons doing this with, DeWitt Clinton and things like that, who was clearly formulating policy and using Masonry as a vehicle to implement political and social and economic change. But again, to Clinton, this would have been a positive, not a negative. But again, if a person wants to view it as negative, that's certainly something that, a subjective viewpoint that a person could have.
I agree. And it's like, what I really don't like is people who go carte blanche and just go, all Freemasons are corrupt, etc. That kind of stuff is too freaking simplistic, honestly, at the end of the day. And I hate those people. They annoy me because they're not actually allowing for individual differences of opinion and things of that nature. In New Zealand, I think we have a 32nd degree Scottish Rite Mason here by the name of John Banks, who's the former mayor of Auckland, our largest city, and the former coalition party leader for the current government. And incidentally, the current prime minister, is also a 32nd degree Freemason. And the John Banks has just been convicted of electoral fraud. And what I found was very interesting about this is, of course, it probably has nothing to do with Freemasonry whatsoever. It might just be a coincidence or something of that nature. But
right.
The three most powerful men in New Zealand are 32nd degree Freemasons, all of them of the Scottish Rite. And
sure.
They've all been implicated in massive corruption, And there's only one of them so far that's actually been privately prosecuted and obtained a conviction. And the second one, the Prime Minister, has currently been going after. So what I was wondering is, what is the responsibility for behaviour outside of the lodge? What kind of rules are Masons supposed to abide by? And if they're not abiding by those behaviours, what kind of consequences do they expect?
Well, the truth is that outside the lodge, and inside the lodge, you're supposed to act like a law-abiding citizen. You know, and this is taught in the Blue Lodge, and you know from the get-go. And I should add, I think I mentioned this earlier, that in order to join the higher degree bodies, you have to be a Blue Lodge Freemason. And again, you know, you're taught and instructed to be morally upright, to not engage in any sort of, I'm just paraphrasing, you know, any sort of chicanery or monkey shines, you know, and you're supposed to just be a law-abiding citizen. That's the standard you're held to. Naturally, depending on the offense, and if you are ultimately convicted of it, and again, it, you know, I mean, if it's a speeding ticket, no one's going to care. But I mean, if it's electoral fraud, my gut reaction would be you would probably, at least on a Blue Lodge level, and of course this would affect your membership in the higher degrees, you would be thrown out. The way it would work is technically with Masonry, it's like you can't unring a bell, but what you would do is you would just be suspended from the lodge. You would technically be tossed out. You wouldn't be able to ever attend, you wouldn't be able to hold yourself out as a Freemason anymore. So that would be the Masonic consequences. Whatever the law would be is, you know, whatever that person, you know, whatever the charges would be, I guess, you would just face in a criminal or civil court or something.
Sure. I was just wondering, like, would they just not make it public, like not publicly kick Banks out of the Brotherhood, because then it would make them, it would basically just say, hey, Banks is amazing, and then start up a whole bloody anti-PR campaign sort of thing, maybe a bit of a fear of that, publicly reprimanding high-level corrupt people who just happen to be Masons?
It would probably, you know, that's a good point, because like you said, it's kind of like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. If they publicize it, it's going to be, oh, well, look at this. You know, how many other guys are corrupt or, you know, are in this thing. But of course, if they kept it quiet, then it's, you see, yeah, look, they're covering it up. They don't want to really do anything. You know, I don't know what sort of, my guess it would be, would probably just be a byline somewhere in a local newspaper. You know, it could be handled internally where he just gets a letter in the mail from the Blue Lodge. And a lot of times, you know, the lodge wouldn't act until, you know, there was some sort of judicial judgment, you know, handed down or anything like that. I mean, if the guy was ultimately exonerated, probably nothing would happen. But, you know, you'd probably just have to wait and see until some sort of, judgment was handed down by the court.
Well, see, that's the difficulty, and I don't know about you, but this is why I don't join organizations, because I'm an individual with my own stuff, and I don't like other people taking responsibility for my actions. I like to take responsibility for my actions, and I don't like other people telling me what actions I can and can't take, or punishing me for actions that I have taken that are wrong. For instance, mate, I punish myself with guilt and remorse, and honesty. But what I've seen is kind of like, do you feel that there's a need by criminal elements within government, banking, etc., to infiltrate secret societies like Freemasonry and many other branches of this in order to perhaps gain more power and use the secrecy for something that it wasn't intended for? It was, I believe, I think, according to my recollection, the intention behind the whole secrecy is, well, you don't actually have to worry when you go in there that people are going to, like, spill your beans and things like that when you go out. You can talk about things that you want with the comfort of knowing that your secrets will be kept and you can say what you really think. Or at least that's how I'd run an organization of such a nature. I'm not sure what the original inception for the secrecy was.
Well, a lot of the secrecy is the ritual. I mean, if a Masonic lodge, if you walked into my Masonic lodge during a Masonic lodge meeting and commit and confess to a crime, they'd probably call 9/11. No one in a Masonic lodge is going to confess crimes or anything like that. A lot of the secret, I mean, it's just, you know, an informal meeting, basically. A lot of the stuff that is secret is the rituals, the handshakes, the passwords, and the morality lesson that it's trying to keep or trying to teach is to keep your word. That's in the end of the day, what it's trying to teach and the reason for the secrecy. The truth be told, you can find all this out on Google anyway. I mean, I guarantee you, and I know, I've seen it. I mean, if you want to go see what a Masonic ritual looks like, I know this stuff is online. You can find these monitors that will detail the ritual, how, where to stand, how to, you know, how to prepare the candidate, where this guy sits, where that guy sits, what he says, what this guy says. This is all online. I guess with Freemasonry, when it's developed, it becomes very popular and it attracts a lot of people of influence to it. I think it's more of a situation where the teachings and morality lessons of Freemasonry can influence a person, and especially a person in power. But I you know, I guess, you know, people could join it. But I don't know if they'd be joining it to, gain, you know, some sort of, you know, a power of some kind. You know, the Masonic Lodge by and large, you know, would disencourage, you know, any sort of, you know, criminal activity going on in the lodge. I mean, unless you have a lodge of nothing but criminals, then I guess, you may be able to get away with it. But, you know, I mean, I know in the lodge I'm in that, you know, in all the meetings I've gone into and both, you know, in my Blue Lodge and at the Scottish Rite, I've never heard any sort of nefarious plans, yeah, being talked about or anything like that.
Unfortunately, we've come to the end of the segment and we have to go. But it occurs to me that with a branch as wide as Freemasonry, there's currently a million plus members worldwide, and there's thousands upon thousands of different lodges with different lodge masters. You can't put everybody in the same kettle of fish. You can't put them all in the same basket, can you? Because everybody's different, just as different as humans are. They just happen to belong to a club with the same nomenclature and profound fondness of symbolism.
I totally agree with you. I mean, just to wrap up real quick, I mean, Freemasonry has had some dark characters involved with it. Aleister Crowley comes to mind. There was a Freemason in the early 1920s named Charles Ledbetter, who, I mean, again, to be fair and balanced about this, he was a Freemason. He wrote several books about Freemasonry and, by and large, was a pedophile. So, I mean, you cannot condemn, all Freemasons for some hiccups here and there.
Thank you very much, Robert Sullivan, ladies and gentlemen. His website is robertwsullivaniv.com. That's robertwsullivaniv.com. Go there and check out his book today. We'll be right back.